Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I like the sound of this last time. Give it up for him. I like the sound of the round of applause.
There it is.
For the recap pod, Bo Rude, Nicholas Allen Baugh. A little Wisconsin recap. Are you good? I mean, I have dumbbells here in my house. You were doing okay. You got some curls in. You got some shoulder presses.
I'm doing curls right now.
Can you do? Is that what we're going to be? We're the alpha. We're the testosterone filled alpha male recap pod. That's what we're doing here.
You know, Scott Frost says this off season is going to be big. Got to hit the weights. So I'm starting early. I'm starting right now.
Oh man, did you ever succumb to the? I was always terrified growing up that lifting weights would ruin your shot in basketball. Remember that? Like in the 90s,
high school, yeah,
it was that was like the thought. It was like, dude, if you lift, you will not be able to shoot.
Shooters in basketball in the old days, that was the big fear. And I remember even having to talk to you about that, and you were skeptical.
I was terrified.
We were like, Nick, football's important. We need you to beef up. And you're like, but my shot.
For me.
Because you would shoot baskets religiously every morning, like
yes.
An hour,
yes.
hour and a half in the morning before every day of school. And we were like, we're trying to get some of that time to be lifting weights time. And you wouldn't get, you're like, no.
It was always bad. There's nothing quite like the anxiety of a high school weight room where you got the full spectrum of people's physical capabilities. And for the big thing, anybody listen to this that lifted weights in high school will know, when you can finally put two plates, not 225, I'm just a plate on each side, so you're
yes.
doing 135, that is a huge thing, because there's something about the, just how 225 plates look on the bench, it's like, ah, look at that push over there, we got
if
the whoosh
you
factory.
Couldn't do a plate on each side, you almost didn't want to be in the weight room.
No, if you got to bench, and you were doing 95, And there's nothing about like just the look of like when you're doing 95 and you're having to arch your back to like get it up. See, I was a 95 bench press guy for a while.
Yeah, when you're pressing it up and your legs are wiggling more than your legs and hips are wiggling more than the rest of your body, that's when
with 95 pounds, that's man. Such a bad look. But I knew the day I could get two plates on there, I was like, there's something about that you're like, anybody that's got two plates on, you give them respect in the weight
yeah.
room. You
yeah.
you can respect what they're doing.
Yeah.
Was the jammer a bad? Was that a pointless? So the jammer was basically like a machine that you would. It looked like it all. It simulated like a football. Like
what's
taking
weird,
on
jammer
a block.
Got a really bad reputation coming out of the late '90s, early 2000s, because a lot of guys down at the university were getting.
That D'Angelo Evans.
Yeah, they got
yeah,
these
like
weird
groin
deals,
yeah.
and I think the blame got put on the jammer. And I don't know
really?
if it's the jammer's fault. It could be, but that was sort of something that I remember taking the blame for it. And so I don't know. A lot of people then went away from the jammer. I never really spent much time with the jammer after high school.
I didn't realize that was what, because I remember D'Angelo Evans was a guy that had that weird groin stuff,
yeah.
and. I didn't realize the jammer was the...
That was the was taking the blame. Like, that was the...
Was the fall guy?
That was the Lee Harvey Oswald.
As the jury reached a verdict on D'Angelo Evans' groin.
We, the jury, find the defendant, the jammer, guilty of ruining D'Angelo Evans' groin.
Is the jury a bunch of Valley girls?
Oh, I got a bunch of stuff I want to get to. We got to get to the... What was the final score? 37-21, the Wisconsin Badgers. Came into Lincoln and won. A couple of things I want to talk about real quick. I did get word when I was at the Nebraska basketball game calling Fred Hoiberg's first win. Shouts out to Fred Hoiberg, Doc Sadler, and the whole crew for getting it done. But I talked to a young man there that asked me if I would be willing to be a guest on Husker Sports Nightly, meaning Greg Sharp wants to talk to me, meaning that he is
what
cool
is?
With my impression, which is a huge relief because you just, like we talked about when I would do my Greg Sharp And Nebraska's going to win the football game. I was nervous that, oh, God, if this gets to Greg and Greg somehow thinks I'm, like, making fun of him and don't like, it's not like that, man. It's not like that.
But I think the fact that you clearly know Greg's great at what he does.
Yes.
And it's almost it's a compliment that somebody's got a unique enough voice, like a signature voice.
Right.
That it's,
you know,
I think
it's, you know, how many just play-by-play guys are just forgettable?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just, you can't even, like, do an impersonation of them. You can't, they don't have any sort of quality.
They don't got barbecue to
he
their voice.
He doesn't have barbecue voice.
That and guy's the, got barbecue.
The guy that I talked to was like, your impression of Greg Schiano. He was a lot. So I want to, I'm excited about that.
He should be selling barbecue sauce right now. We should get him a sponsor.
How inside of every local Hy-Vee or supermarket around town there isn't Greg Sharp barbecue sauce? Yeah,
and just a big just poster of him, and he's just
the,
like...
The bottle is like a microphone or something like that. Like, it's just...
This is the barbecue sauce. It's the best. It's going to be great. It's got sweetness, tangy. We got spicy. It goes on wings, tangy. Chicken, ribs. Oh, my gosh.
You want barbecue sauce on burgers and fries? And just, Nebraska's going to win a football game.
Oh, my God. You talk about barbecue sauce.
So I'm excited that Greg Sharp is clearly okay with me.
Well, that's sweet.
That is good. The other thing that happened at a Nebraska basketball game on Friday night was I ran into one Jake Muehlheisen. And Mule told me that he was doing a one-day juice cleanse because Mule's getting ready to go to the Cayman Islands. So Mule's trying to get sexy for the Cayman Islands.
One day.
Yeah, one day is going to do it for Mule. But he said, and I'm ready to put it in your face, he goes, dude, I'm freezing. Remember you told me at my first day of the juice cleanse, I was freezing, and you tried to tell me that I was being a soft.
You were. Nick Baugh's mental game was weak, is what I was telling him. And
so here's the thing. If I'm being weak, that means Mule's being weak.
But see,
you got a lot of people you're telling.
I'm not against calling Mule weak, though.
Okay.
Either, so.
I just want to let you know that now we have, in my case study, in my scientific study, three people, me, Kimmy, my wife, and Mule, all got cold on the first day of the juice cleanse. We're going to find out, because are you doing this after Thanksgiving?
As of right now, the Monday after Thanksgiving, I'm still planning on
you
going.
You call
for
me
it,
so. On Monday and you're cold, you,
I'm gonna eat
I
my
will
words.
Not be giving you a blanket. I will not be giving you a damn thing, okay?
Oh, man, I'm going to be eating my words.
Okay, and then the other thing before we get into the game. You know, I was really into Scott Frost's guns.
You haven't spoken about his guns in a week.
I mean, it's colder out, so I haven't seen his guns as much. He's covering them up.
Hiding
his guns, which just makes me not happy. I met Fred Hoiberg. Homeboy has got some mitts. I was almost, when I shook Fred Hoiberg's hands, I tried to not, like, my jaw was agape, and I wanted to look down at his hands and be like, oh, my God.
He had some banana fingers?
I mean, Fred Hoiberg's hands are huge.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And not only the huge, he looked like if he was like, if he hit you with a Y-Iata to the face. I mean, he doesn't look like Fred. Like,
yeah, I didn't think, because he's like 6'5",
yeah,
right?
He was, everything about it, he was a bigger guy, and then in person, and then when I shook his hand, I was like, it was hard. You know, something happens, and it's like, don't call attention to it.
Yeah.
I was just shaking his
hand. Don't look directly at them.
I wanted to, like, look at his hands and be like, wow. I got a date. Fred. I wouldn't want to be your mittens.
Yeah. I feel bad for your mittens.
But, man, that dude's hands were enormous. So my goal for you over the next 6 months is to meet Fred Hoiberg, shake his hands, and try to not just get distracted by the size of his hands.
I mean, has he got Rondo hands?
No. I do remember shaking Rondo's hands, and we'd play. I was like, even during, you know, like the quick, I was like, oh, my God. No, Rondo, he just – Different style of hands, but I mean, maybe I just wasn't expecting it, but it was.
Well, so with basketball, that's such a huge advantage, yes, to have like those big paws, because then you can do that.
You can control the rock
from wherever you're holding.
And then before we get into the game, can I just say, and because we've talked about this a lot with Frost, the thing that I just love about both the coaches at Nebraska,
their guns and their
mitts. I love their guns and their hands. All right, I love their hands and their guns. Oh. Basically, I want a shirt of Scott Frost's guns with Fred Hoiberg's hands touching his guns.
I mean, Nick.
That's what I want. Is that too much to ask?
This is what all the men out there are just... They're dying to hear this type of talk, but yeah.
Hand and gun pack, you know?
I love it.
Kind of hands you get.
But you really hadn't talked about Scott's guns in a while, so this is a good...
We need to revisit the gun talk.
And now we got one more...
You know what? Here's what needs to happen. And I don't know the bowl sites. They need to get to a bowl that's a warm weather bowl so we can get some, like, December guns.
Well, we got to do our curls then right now. Let's get it done here. One, two, three.
We're done.
Okay, three. There we go.
But real quick.
We really do have dumbbells in here.
I curled a 30-pound dumbbell. What I really like about Hoiberg and Frost, even McDermott for this case, they totally get what's important for players. Like, talking to Hoiberg, it was, you know, because Nebraska had lost their first two games and they hadn't shot it well. And the first thing he said was like, well, listen, he goes, basketball is a hard game to play when you're not confident. And we just aren't confident because we're not making shots.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was just that simple. Whereas, like, sometimes you can get all crazy about, like, oh, we got to adjust how we're doing this and that. It's like, sometimes you just got to make shots and start to feel good about yourself. And I just, like, I think Frost, Hoiberg, they just understand the importance of confidence. They understand the importance of feeling fresh physically, I think. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things. I just, like, I love, because you think, like, both these guys are players, coaches, and, like, I just love that about both those guys.
Well, and they were also elite players. I think that's a difference that there are coaches that have said, look, I've played, and they played, you know, the competition's not as high, or they weren't as big of a role, and that still matters to play at all, think. Yeah. But to be an elite player two guys were, that's different. They have a whole nother sort of level of expectation that they've lived and gone through, and they know what it's like to have to perform and the things you're thinking about on the higher levels.
Right,
too.
Because I think – because you could even think about some of the stuff that Frost talked about with Martinez after the game. Like, on just how much – you forget how much those two guys can relate to each other now, you know, which helps guide them. Okay. Wisconsin, Nebraska, 37-21. I think – I don't know where you're – so you and I talked on Wednesday night, previewing the game. I thought Nebraska was going to lose. I thought there's a pretty good chance they were going to get beat pretty good. And I didn't think it was going to be like a, you know, a 50-burger or anything like that. But then you get the news that no Wandale Robinson and no Darian Daniels –
and then no Carlos
Davis. Like, I'm not sure, in particular, Wandale and Darian Daniels, for this team, you just were going to need Big Boy to hold up in the middle.
And maybe the two most important guys other than Martinez on the field.
Other than Martinez, I'm not so sure if you had me go write down the guys that just cannot miss this game. I don't think – I honestly think I would have wrote Wandale, Darian Daniels, and probably – And so I'm not going to lie, I braced myself for like, oh, man, I thought this was going to be bad. And now without those guys, they're going to have to play really well to even hang in there. And with all that said, and we'll get into all of it, this loss and this game felt different than almost every other game this year, where sure, we don't want to become loser silver lining guys, but at the same time, like, I am not sitting down to do this pod. Usually when we see each other on Sundays, it's like body language is shitty and we're like, God, can you believe? Like, I'm not in that place right now.
No, not at all. And it does tell you where we're at as a team and program.
That you can lose 37-21.
We're losing and we're not upset with a loss. That's where we're at, which is not a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll start there. But you're right. There was a lot of really positive takeaways from this game. This felt more like Ohio State last year, where we go, oh, we can play with them. Wisconsin's a good team. Are they 14th in the country, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
14th in the country. And
14th, correct.
I mean,
8-2, one of the best defenses in the country.
Yeah, and I think we had two of our four best players on this team were not playing in this game, and we're probably looking back at this game going, wow, we had a really good chance of winning that.
Right.
And so it is. I think the state of the program's not great where we're not that down after a loss, but like that was a step in the right direction.
No
I've
question.
Seen one in weeks. That was showing me bright signs for the future, potentially.
It is amazing, because what we decided to do structurally was kind of just go through the game. I mean, I think there was enough in the game to kind of just work our way through it. But before we get into that, I do think there is, like, it is amazing that, and this just must be where Nebraska's at with how thin their margin for error is, where it kind of feels like the game came down to three plays.
Mm-hmm.
The kickoff return, the tipped interception, and the 20-yard sack.
Yeah.
Like, those three plays don't happen, and I think the game's completely different. And it's pretty remarkable how Nebraska just, where they're at, because Frost had a line after the game was like, we're really close and we're also miles away at the same time. And I think that's kind of how it is, where it's like, it comes down to like three mistakes, and that's enough for you to be down multiple touchdowns.
Yeah, and that was kind of a good phrase, like, we're this close, but we're miles away. You're this close because all these games are, it's a couple of plays, but we're miles away because we're always making those plays the wrong way.
Right.
We're always,
yeah, it's
not
easy to
so just, that's where we're a long ways away with not only culture, but
right.
And we'll get into this a little bit down the road, but like
right.
Some of those guys that were in there just weren't good enough to make the plays that were there.
Right.
And then we'll go into that.
So game starts. You get a pretty good opening drive from Nebraska moving the ball. It just looked and felt different. Like, didn't Do you remember the scene? Do you remember the scene with the Lost Boys and Peter Pan, when one of the Lost Boys, the chubby one, is feeling Robin Williams' face, and he's like, Peter, there you are. I felt like I went to Adrian Martinez's face, and I was like, oh, Adrian, there you are.
Yes.
Tell me. I want two things. What was the biggest difference with Martinez's running? And then what were they doing that allowed Mills to get kind of like off tackle? Because that's a good defense that Nebraska was like gashing on the ground.
Two things that I saw pretty quickly in that game. The offensive line looked sharp.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line looked like they weren't getting pushed around. They were sealing blocks. They were just, I feel like they were on their game.
Because there was room. Like,
there was room.
Mills, a lot of Mills' long runs, like, there was room for him to rock.
Yeah, but they did a really good job of scheming there. So a lot of those were, like, those off-tackle wide or just around the edge
right.
where they were not blocking a guy on the end, sealing everybody else, and making that guy make a decision. And we were just beating them. Like, we were giving it to Mills, and they weren't reacting. So we just did a really good job scheming, and our line blocked well. So those are the two things that stood out right away. I was like, oh, our line's there today. So that was, I think, very encouraging watching the start of that game. The second thing is Martinez, you know, just a few little things you notice. He would pull that ball down and go get six sometimes.
Yes.
Go get 6 yards, and it's second and four. And all of a sudden,
no,
we're not taking that bad sack or a bad throwaway or like a chance for a pick. I think just that psychology of him just sort of going, I'm listening to people. Even though sometimes people are overly critical.
Sure.
They're not necessarily wrong. You got to be a little bit more decisive. Sometimes you got to just tuck it and take those easy yards. And you know what? You don't make mistakes then.
Well, I think the first play of the game was a 5-yard run scramble.
Yeah, nothing there. He just squeaked out.
Squeaked out and gets five.
And
so,
then you're second and five.
We talked about this months ago. There, you know, the saying of like, you'll never go broke taking a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's just it. Like, one of the biggest differences between when you watch Jalen Hurts play and you watch Martinez play is Hurts will always just go get 5 yards, go get 6 yards, go get. And I do think Martinez is probably a better arm at times, just in terms of raw arm talent. And so maybe he kind of wants to kind of, you know, drive the ball down the field. But I totally agree. I just thought there was a more decisive Martinez to run.
And at his clock, you can tell they've been working on it, that his clock is going, go take it quicker.
Yes.
He was thinking that quicker. So, for sure, those were two big takeaways that that I think helped us early.
And I know we're still on the first drive that didn't even score, but with was, I mean, we got to talk about Mills for a second because he, I mean, 17 carries, 188 yards, 11 yards a carry, and a touchdown. And do you think what, I mean, he's been coming along. Like, he's gotten better each week. And then there's something to when you know you're going to get carries, you're going to be the guy. Like, what, I guess, what did you, what?
It's rhythm. I think there's a rhythm. Even running backs, like, if you get one carry every quarter, it's a little bit hard to just sort of see the holes. You know, get your feel. I think you sometimes get in there and you just, especially Mills, he would just run hard and run into people.
Right.
Where, you know, he was, there were some big lanes today and he was hitting them. But then what I noticed about Mills today was it was his day. He was going to get the carries. And the more carries he got, the more tackles he broke.
Right.
So he was running through tackles today. Those arm tackles that I think were getting him early this year, he, for whatever reason, found his, like, his ability to wiggle free and just to make those 5 yard runs 15.
Right.
And, you know, then make that 115 a 40. And that's such a, then all of a sudden his confidence, like you say, we're talking about confidence, goes from there to there.
Tell me about, what's that like? Cause you were a really good running back in high school. What is the, I mean, it makes sense that obviously the rhythm that you would get from just more, like, what is that? Is that kind of what you just described of, like, what,
just,
I mean,
you just start seeing, just, like, everything slows down a little bit. You see the holes more. I think the, you know, it's just hard to come in and just have sporadic plays.
I just think it's really hard. I can only equate that to when you go from being the man getting 15, 20 shots a game.
No different.
To getting, you, I mean, you don't know.
One or two threes a game on kickouts. You make it or you miss it. Or, and all of a sudden you're thinking about it.
And then you maybe start hunting a little bit. And maybe that's the other thing, too, with, like, a guy like Mills. I don't think he's necessarily like this. But there's some guys when they know they're only going to get five carries in a game, instead of sticking your head in and getting 4 yards, they want to try to make something happen because they know they're only going to get a couple of carries.
Yeah, you're more likely to make the wrong decision if you only get a couple chances because you're wanting too much usually.
Yes,
for those. So
right.
The more carries you get, the more you can just sort of be like, I'm going to take what they're going to give me, and you know, and you make more of those opportunities. And that's what I saw of Mills, is you could see he had the speed, he had the power. I don't know that we've seen the vision before.
Right.
And today he showed, or yesterday he showed a little bit more vision. And he really, I think, those things, those skill sets we've seen of him sort of shined. But he was breaking tackles.
In a perfect world moving forward, how is Wandale used? Like, do you...
A little of everything.
Okay, because that, like, what it, I
put
mean,
put him anywhere and everywhere, and get him the ball 20 touches a game.
Okay, because I mean, he's had to. Because I don't know if he's necessarily a guy that you want to line up at I-back and have him get 20 carries that way.
I think he's a guy you give him 5 from I-back, 5 on sweeps, 5 on, you know, bubbles
screens
and screens,
and
then 5 down the field.
Because
if you can get that guy 20 touches a game. Awesome.
Because that's the other thing I thought was exciting about that game was, you know, I don't know if Mills showed, like, what he's maybe capable of.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, then that can allow Wandale to maybe go back to where he's at his best. What Wandale's at his best at, like, what you just said, like, getting him touches everywhere.
He's our Mr. Do Everything guy, and that's what we'd like to use him for. So now I think the big challenge is one of these freshman running backs or recruits coming in and getting another receiver to complement
Wandale
and Mills.
Right.
Because I don't, you know, I still think that Mills' game.
I'm not enamored. I'm not like.
It's pretty meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing.
No.
Because we needed a bigger bodied meat and potatoes guy. But you need someone to complement him that's not Wandale having to take all those carries.
Agree. So. The score is 0-0 and Nebraska.
And join us next week on the Nick Bob Podcast. We'll take you through the whole second quarter.
Coming up on episode 2 of Nebraska, Wisconsin. What in the hell happened on the second possession of the game? Okay, so
who's going to score first?
So
episode 3.
Who is, what's the first commercial of the TV timeout going to be? So you get the Jonathan Taylor fumble. Then on, so Wisconsin's first possession.
Yep.
They're driving it a little bit. unbelievable catch by Taylor. And then I'm not sure if you rewatch the game. I mean, the fumble is like how that thing hung in. Remarkable. And then so then there just is like, so Nebraska recovers the fumble and drives down the field and punches it in. 7-0 Nebraska.
Okay, was there any way on earth we were not going to run on the one?
Oh, God, no.
I'm saying, yes. Like, was it 100% that was going to be a quarterback run and punch it in?
Yes.
I'm saying there was no chance. There was zero chance that wasn't going
to
be.
But the then you allow yourself to go, okay, is today the day? You had a good first drive. You are the one that forced the turnover. You catch a break by that ball somehow spinning and staying in bounds. You punch it in. It's 7-0. I don't know how the state – were you at the game?
No, I was –
you watched it home? Yep. I mean, so I imagine the stadium's rocking, and then what happens? Kickoff return. A 89-yard kickoff return that just has been – that's Nebraska in a nutshell. Like, tease you, then oh – and one step forward, two steps back. I mean, it's been a theme all year. Nebraska's kicking situation is really not good.
It's unbelievable how bad it is. I mean, it's unbelievable and how their timing has been it's been impeccably bad.
Unbelievable.
Every time we need a big play out of the kick, not only do they not make a big play, they always make a bad play. And that's one that I think that changed the game more than anything because we finally had something go our way.
Yes.
That fumble was one of the, like, the football gods gave you a play, and those haven't been going for us. And then what happens? We turn around and we give up a kickoff return.
An 89-yard kickoff return where you had a chance to capitalize on the momentum. And then the other thing, too, was, and granted it was early, but it was still one of the most important things, and Frost talked about this, was you couldn't get to where you were playing from behind against Wisconsin. They're an impossible team to play against if you're playing from behind. Where they struggle is if they're behind.
Because then they have to throw it, yes. And they can't do it.
And so it was not only important because it's points, but it also was just the element of, like, the dynamic of the game changes. And so then on the next drive for Nebraska – another productive – they were converting third downs, mm-hmm. some third and longs. You know, they converted a 3rd-and-7 on a 16-yard run from Mills. But they ultimately go for it at the Wisconsin 33, get stuffed on a Mills run, and turn the ball over on downs. Mm-hmm. And then Wisconsin turns and drives the ball 10 plays, 53 yards, and bangs a field goal through to make it 10-7. So not the, you know, everybody's still feeling okay because I just like the way the offense was looking. The offense was moving the ball. The offense was moving the ball. So then on the ensuing possession, Nebraska was 5 plays, 73 yards, and that was, I think you had that was the play where Martinez punched it in from the two. The first touchdown was the Mills 12-yarder on the direct snap.
You're right. I got those two men. Yeah.
But, Martinez punches it in, so now it's 14-10, 14-10 Nebraska into the second quarter. And a big part of some of these games was, like, hanging in there, and Nebraska was, like, it was hard to not feel good about how that game was going. It was like you just kind of eliminate the kickoff return, and you feel like you dominated that first quarter,
that's how it felt, because they really felt like they were dominating that game up to that point.
And then the first really bad defensive play, I thought, happened on their 55-yard touchdown pass where just the tackling was not good, where A.J. Taylor bounced off a couple of guys. Cam Taylor had a chance to get him.
Boodle didn't.
So it was one of those plays that should have been – I mean, it should have been like a 20-yard gain, and you have some bad tackling. They go run it in, and so now it's 17-14. And then here's the next big play. You get the tipped interception, and then Wisconsin scores in 3 plays. And all of a sudden, it's 24-14.
Yep.
And you're sitting there going,
what the hell?
We So that's this season though. We actually outplayed them for two quarters, and it's 24-14.
24-14 with 5 minutes left in the second quarter. Because I watched it all over. I watched it this morning, and you're sitting there. I literally hit pause and like took a moment, and I'm like, this is unbelievable.
And all it takes is three plays. It's three plays that doesn't really happen with us right now. We're not a team where we're getting beat, but, three plays didn't go our way and we're up 24-14. Never is going to happen to us this year.
Because the kickoff return, the long pass with all the leaky tackles, and the tipped interception.
Yeah.
And, it's demoralizing because you feel like you're really playing well and you're down 14 because then Nebraska punched on the next possession and actually thought the defense, they gave up the 13-play, 73-yard drive, but didn't give up a touchdown.
Yeah.
And I thought there were numerous times where, because even earlier I should have mentioned that, like I thought the defense did a good job of holding them to three. I mean, there were two separate possessions where they held them to a field goal, which is huge.
Yeah.
So there was a chance, it was going to be 31-14 at half, and it's 27-14 at half, and you're like, okay.
It was a win. It was a win going into half to hold them to three.
Yes.
That was a big deal. Like, that was a psychological – That was good to see that they weren't just going to let the floodgates totally run open, right?
Totally.
So they held them. So that was a good.
That was a win. That was a moral win. Victory a little bit, It's like it could have been 31-14, and then you're not feeling good about it. But you hold them to three, 27-14, and you can be mad at yourself in the locker room, but at the same time you sit there and go, God damn, 89-yard kickoff. You have a kind of a. I don't want to call the tipped interception like a fluky play.
It wasn't a bad play, though. They tipped the ball to the line. I mean, that's one of those you go, that happens a couple times a season. You go, darn it.
Right.
But nothing you can do.
And then if you just tackle a guy, the game's a lot different.
Yeah, if you tackle a guy and don't give up a kickoff turn, it's pretty much, that's 21 points of theirs.
Yes.
It's like...
And so, at halftime, Mills was rolling, Martinez was rolling. The offense had moved the ball, but they had only scored 14 points. But then here comes the second half, where Nebraska's been a bad third quarter team and a bad start. This felt like when the half started, you thought, in my mind, my cynical mind, I'm sure, I was kind of like, what's about to happen here?
Yeah.
They're going to march 75 yards. Jonathan Taylor's just going to, death of a thousand cuts, punch it in. It's going to be 34-14, and the game's over.
Yep.
What happens? Three and out. And you're like, okay, Nebraska's going to get the ball back, three and out. I mean, it was three plays, 0 yards. Here we go. Nebraska then drives down, just is marching down the field. And then there is what turned out to be one of the five defining plays of the game. First and 10 at the Wisconsin 24, Adrian Martinez takes a sack for a loss of 20. After, by the way, Wisconsin had to call timeout. Because Nebraska, Martinez completed a pass to Spielman, then Martinez completed a long pass to Kenawai Noah. And Wisconsin had to call a timeout because they were reeling. Mm-hmm. And then you get the 20-yard sack. And then obviously Nebraska tries to get back into field goal range. They get it to a 41-yard field goal, misses the field goal. So all of a sudden, what could have been 27-21 or 27-17 is still 27-14. And then what happens? Nine plays, probably the worst the defense had looked.
Yeah.
Up until that point where they score and it's 34-14 and it kind of feels like
that's game. Oh. That was game time. Even though it was like they had opportunities, it was really
that sequence,
was enough. That was enough that you knew that it was over.
Yeah. It's just, because Frost said, because they had time to talk about it because Wisconsin had called timeout, that he had talked to, Martinez, they wanted to take a shot on first down, and he had told Martinez, no turnovers, no sacks. And you take a 20-yard sack. And that's, in a lot of ways, that's the game. In a span of in a span of 10, 12 plays, that's the game.
Yeah, it's just that's been the whole season, though. There's no room for error. And that tells you, like, we're talented enough that we playing decent football should beat Indiana and Purdue. We're talented enough for that.
Right.
We're not talented enough to beat Wisconsin, Ohio State, you know, Penn State, or even maybe Michigan or Iowa, unless we play pretty much perfect right now. Because, I mean, we're only – it's a handful of plays that are not going well, and we are losing by 16 points. And other than that, we were, like, winning the game, you know?
Yeah, it is a sign of, like – the sign of – because we talked about this on Wednesday. The sign of a team that's just not very good right now is, number one, when it's something kind of different each week that hurts you. And then the other sign is like how small your margin for error is. And that's Nebraska right now, where it all of a sudden, you know, it's 34-14 and you're telling yourself like, God, it feels like Nebraska's actually played okay. And you're down 34-14.
Yeah.
And so now the good news was that Nebraska then responded right back with a 4-play 75-yard drive to make it 34-21. And then the defense forces a punt. And then you get your two drives where Nebraska gets all the way down into the red zone and gets stuffed on a fourth down. They went for it on fourth and fourth. It was Wisconsin 17. They tried to run Martin. I don't know if it was a design run or a pass scramble. I'm trying to remember now,
he kind of ran right into. For some reason, I don't think he like.
I think he didn't know where the sticks were. I think he thought. I think he tried to go truck him and see if he could get.
Yeah,
but he wasn't
he
even close.
To just be more elusive on that one. And that's one I'm sure he'll want back. But yeah, it was just and we'll get into the play before that. That's one of the problem plays. But you know, like we fumbled on third and one,
right?
Fumbled it backwards. Almost lost the ball, and then it was fourth and four.
Right. I forgot about
that. Missouri. So we'll talk a little bit about some of those plays in a second. But, yeah, we were still had an opportunity because then we're down less than a score. We've been 28-34, well, and you're a touchdown away from winning.
That's the thing. It's like missing that field goal, like that whole sequence of missing that field goal, then it for just your kicking situation in general – has impacted the way Nebraska handles red zone situations.
Yep.
You know, because if you would have made that field goal, then you could have kicked another field goal and you're within striking distance.
We missed two field goals, so that means we would have been at 27, already at 27 then, and we would have been within a touchdown anyway. So, we probably would have had to go for it.
But it just alters everything. So then
it does.
Nebraska gets stuffed. It's just amazing how few of Nebraska only had 1, 2, 3, 4 possessions in the second half. But that's what they do, man. That's what they do.
Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin then 10 plays, 72 yards, 5.5 minutes off the clock, kicks a field goal, 37-21. And Nebraska has a 12 play, 74-yard drive that ends at the Wisconsin 4-yard line where Martinez, they go for on fourth and goal. Has a little inside bubble screen to Wyatt Mazur, and I don't did the O lineman that was out there miss a block? Yes, but Wyatt Mazur has to get it. If you're a player,
so yeah, so and nothing against Wyatt Mazur.
No, I actually like Wyatt Mazur.
We got to get into this now because that's the base. That's the game, right?
The game's over.
So this game showed me there's a handful of plays where you got to have some guys.
Yes,
and no offense to the Wyatt Mazur, that guy works hard. But, you know, he fumbled a kickoff. He fumbled on that third and one and cost us to be back into fourth and four. And then we give it to him on the goal line. He's got to get a yard.
And he gets stuck backwards.
By a cornerback where, like, you cannot not get in there.
How do you not? I mean,
you got to find a way. You can't get tackled. And I don't – being little, like a shorter guy doesn't matter. Like, Amir Abdullah gets in.
Wandale Robinson gets in. Danny Woodhead gets in.
Yeah, you got. We got to. You know, that's where we don't have any. We didn't have anybody else to get the ball to. And like I said, I don't. I hate even like calling anybody because that's a good kid. They get that kid. You know, he's a walk on to earn a scholarship. But
he's not a bad player.
No, but that just shows us though. Like in crunch time, we had to give a walk-on running back the ball when we didn't have anybody else with the juice to get it done.
Explain to me, because that was one of the things that people talked about too, was explain to me Mills not being in the game or getting a lot of touches on those final two drives.
I don't know on the one, you know, when they sub or why on those, because
yeah,
you know, maybe Mills needed a break, but I do know that Mills, they don't want to throw it to.
I guess that was my guess, was any passing package they don't really like having Mills on the field.
I think that includes pass blocking. I don't know that he really, that's one of his strengths right now, is understanding the blocking schemes and where he needs to be in the positioning he needs to be in. So I think there's reasons for that, but that just tells me our lack of depth, that Nebraska doesn't have a guy they can give the ball to in those situations other than Mills on like a straight dive. Like, because that was a good play call. I liked the call. We had a blocker out there. The blocker's got to make that hard on the defender. And I don't care if there's no blocker. If you catch the ball on the one, and you got to get a yard. You got to find a way to get a freaking yard.
I'm just trying to, like, as you're talking, go through. I only count 4 carries for Mills in the second half.
He had the
one sequence, the one drive where he had the sideline interference penalty, which is, I mean, inexcusable. But you had Mills had a long run on that, a 43-yard run on that drive.
Stayed in bounds on that one?
Where he did that a good job staying in bounds, and then he
kind of ran out on his own, though.
Right, but that was a hell of a run.
Hell of a run, but like I'm saying, like you get in, like that's another thing. Like sometimes you got to get in.
But I'm just I was hoping someone in the postgame would ask about that, just like why Mills wasn't in. I'm not sitting here because
I don't know.
It's funny how you, it's like the tone in which you, because you're not like, I'm not attacking Fraud. I just am curious, like what.
Yeah.
I mean, and my guess is what we're saying of like, I think it comes down to pass. They seemed like, because they were doing a lot of empty. Yeah. They were doing a lot of, and maybe it was just the package of plays was better for White Mazur.
No clue. I on those, like I said, the only thing I question is who do you want getting the ball on third and one? And you wish you had more multiple guys you can hand it to, but he was basically the only guy I think I want running up inside. But there wasn't much there. Anyway,
and the reality is, I mean, Nebraska is going to have – the game was – I mean, Nebraska's going to have to – so Mazur gets in. They're going to have to convert a two-point conversion – probably get an onside kick, then go score again and convert another two-point conversion. Yeah.
I mean,
the game was – it's not like
– look, we weren't winning that game anyway, so it doesn't matter.
When it was 34-14, the game was over.
Yeah, but it just – it shows you where – to me, the bigger picture is, well, one, I'm so impressed with Adrian Martinez staying on the theme of, like, why we got to get guys. Well, Adrian Martinez is really good.
Yeah.
He's a good player, and he just ran for basically 100 yards, threw for 200 yards against a really good Wisconsin defense with no receivers. And, I mean, we couldn't even think about throwing the ball down the field. We threw it down the field to Spielman once.
Right.
But I'm talking like
– got Noah on one down by the goal line.
But, like, we don't have a true wideout, like a split – like a true, like, X receiver we can throw it to. And we basically manufactured – this run game against Wisconsin. And I'm kind of impressed with our offensive line because Wisconsin had to know, like, we're not throwing it.
Right.
So we did all that running against them when they knew we were going to run it. And so that shows you, I think, what we're capable of. And now you throw in
– you go get a
get
dude.
Some dudes
you can go get, yeah,
develop on the outside guys. And get one more running back to kind of help that. I mean, we would have an arsenal.
It is.
We'd be tough. We'd be tough to defend.
Yeah. It is – I thought Martinez, one of the things we talked about on these final three games and what's important, it's important to try to get to a bowl game for momentum and all those things, but I thought these final three games were important for Martinez and just kind of the complexion of that position and what that looks like moving forward. One game in to these final three games, Martinez, I thought, really showed like flashes of like, man,
he needed that game as much as anybody.
Because he even talked about how he needed to find, like, that he'd been kind of struggling and found his groove a little bit, which was good. But, you know, the offense, it is crazy how the offense can put up the kind of numbers they put up and do what they did. But then, you know, Dirk had a little nugget of the Badgers crossed midfield 8 times and scored 6 times. Nebraska crossed midfield 8 times and scored 3 times. Nebraska's ability to convert points, whether it's red zone or whatever, has been really bad. I don't know what it is today. I was going to check it before we started the pod, but it slipped my mind. They're 12th in the Big Ten in red zone offense. Like, they've, and maybe a lot of it goes back to the kicking game and impacting things, but like, the whole Bo Pelini of, you know, it's not about yards, ma'am, it's about points. It's like Nebraska, yeah, they racked up 493 yards of offense and averaged, an amazing per play average against. I mean, they averaged 10 points per play or 10 points per or 10 yards per play after halftime. But I mean, they scored 7 points and scored 21 points for the game.
It's funny, you know, you start going through those first handful of drives, and you like, and I starred this. I wrote down red zone offense because that was something I wanted to come back to. There's no question. There's two things that need to happen with this offense next year. One, they need to get some more weapons, and that needs to be addressed. And two, they need to work on the red zone offense. And I think those two things complement each other. So more better players mean you're going to break more tackles, score more touchdowns. You'll be able to throw fades. You'll be able to do more things.
Yeah.
And you're harder to defend. But two, the same thing, like just the philosophy of like we have to get points when we're down here. They got to really spend some time, I think, focusing on red zone offense more than anything.
Totally agree.
Anything else. So red zone offense is maybe sort of their 4 minute offense at the end of the games. Those are really, if you're going into an off season,
right, of like that's, 4 or 5 things. That you,
yeah. Number one and number two is red zone offense. And two is probably your, you know, the game management offense time, that 4 minute
totally run. Agree.
Those are the two things that I think that I see as an issue. Like you get some more players are going to help both those things, but right, man, like we have been historically bad
in
the
red
zone
this
year.
Totally.
Historically,
it's funny. It's the first thing.
Turnovers?
Yeah.
Oh man.
It's funny how our notes are probably the same. It was one of the first things I wrote down after the game was, in all reality, and you know what? Go back to the Purdue game. You know what, honestly, what the difference in that game was Purdue scored in the red zone and Nebraska didn't.
Yeah.
Like, that's the game.
It's been a bunch of games for us. Like, you know, you go in the Indiana, like, we turn it over in the red zone. We've been historically bad with this red zone offense. And there's a lot of reasons. Probably 1A is just we got to have more weapons because right, that – when there's all of a sudden there's less space to defend and it really gets tough for us without weapons. So
I want to talk about Martinez for a little bit longer before I want to get into the defense and a couple other things and then we'll wrap this bad boy up. But with Martinez, there felt like, because we even talked about it at times throughout the year, like, damn, is Frost developing a blind spot for Martinez? Is he just hitched his wagon too much to Martinez to where he's not seeing mm-hmm. it clear? And even you had the anecdote where Frost talked after the game of saying, like, basically was saying that Martinez has been criticized a lot. I went through it when in 96 we were 11-2 and I was the most hated man in the state. Like, I think, like I said back in September, he looks at Martinez and I think he sees a little bit of himself. But then you see games like that and you're like, that's all. There's also the talent aspect of, like, this is why Frost is just totally committed to that guy.
And he's a true sophomore, 19 years old. Like,
so it's just a weird, I guess it's just, this guy, there are moments you're like, damn, Scott, what are you seeing? And then you watch some of these other games, you're like, damn, that's what he's seeing. And then the other thing too is like, the thing that kills me is and ultimately you can only go off of games because it's all we see. But at the end of the day, like, we all speak like we see practice every day.
No, Exactly.
Like there's this assumption again. The whole like the backup quarterbacks always that you know it plays into the psychology of like fans of like they think that the backup quarterbacks you know Tom Brady sitting there waiting to go in and it's like you don't know that you know what I mean like there's this idea that like you, this whoever would go in other than Martinez would be a baller and it's just not like that.
Yeah, those guys see him every day. He was awesome last year.
Yes,
as a true freshman, he struggled. But there's no question that he still has the talent. They've seen it, and they know it's. There's a few things he needs to do, and there's a few pieces we need to add. But the future is bright, man. It is bright with this kid. Like, if we can put some pieces around him, he's the type of guy that can take you a long way. And that's the truth. And not everybody can say that. There's about 100, you know, college teams out there that, you know, 10 of them can probably say that.
Mm-hmm.
And we got maybe one of those 10 guys that you go, yeah, with this guy you can do some things.
The other thing I just – and I'm probably too I sometimes get too wrapped up in this stuff. But damn, that guy's impressive every time he talks.
It's important.
And it's not phony. It's not an act. But, like, do you see the whole – I didn't realize this. I read this in Dirk's column that – after every game, Martinez rushes out to make sure that he watches Scott Frost's press conference. And they asked Martinez why. And Martinez said, quote, just stay on message. I want us to be one in that way.
That's next level.
That's such a good answer. And it's such a smart thing. And so this guy, here's this much maligned quarterback that's been a lightning rod for conversations and what the hell and all this stuff. And then he shows flashes on the field where you go, wow. And then he shows flashes from an intangible standpoint that I think matter. And it's not to say that he hasn't struggled. He has struggled at times, but damn, if we're going to point out all the times he struggles, I still think we got to point out all the times that he plays well and does well.
Oh, and that's why we're talking about him here, and I think that's why we're excited. We lost a game to a conference rival, and we are kind of excited because we just saw the future with this kid. We saw that it's still there.
Right.
That this kid can be the guy that turns everything around if we just give it time, give him pieces. Like, let the development happen. It's all still there. It's just, it sucks right now that we're not getting W's, but that guy just showed what he can do.
Yeah. Okay, so we haven't even really got into the defense. Let's get into the defense, because we've talked about just kind of like the turning point plays in the offense. What did you see?
So, last week for the preview,
yep,
the preview pod episode, which everybody needs to check out if you haven't listened yet. I said there's three things this defense needs to do to win this game. One, we got to be disciplined, like sound in your responsibilities, just doing your job, right? Two, we had to be more physical than we've been all year at the point of attack, especially on the D-line, you know, just holding that wave on blockers. Last year, we were getting moved a lot, okay? And the third thing was tackle and wrap up. Those are the three things we need to do. And you know what we did? We came out and we did two of those things.
Yeah.
We did two of the three. And it gave us a decent chance to win, but you know what we didn't do? We didn't tackle and wrap up.
I mean, yeah.
Maybe the simplest of all three. We did the things that are probably, you know, what they quote unquote harder to do. Be disciplined, be gap sound.
Yeah, hold up.
Hold up against Wisconsin. Like, for the most part, we got moved a couple of times.
Which is, I mean, you're playing Wisconsin. But you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but it wasn't near as badly as last year. Last year, we were getting moved for just play after play.
And this is without Davis and Darian Daniels.
Yeah, so our backup guys, you know, Stilly and some of these guys, and even some of the true freshmen were in there.
And even the JUCO, Jakeem Green, I think, got in there too. And
I don't even know if those guys did well, but they were in there. So that tells you something. But for the most part, watching it, I go, man, we were in our gaps. We had chances. We just had some guys that just couldn't tackle. Love, you know, Boodle's been a tough dude for us this year. Everybody kind of said, like, he's a guy you can count on. And I think they moved him to safety, actually, this game.
Yeah.
But he just couldn't tackle. And, you know, there's a couple guys that just were just – whiffing and just like, you know, just a there was just a handful of those that, like you said, the game came down to really a couple of plays, but we didn't give up any big plays to them other than the one touchdown. Jonathan Taylor did not get a run over 20 yards. Like,
right.
If you would have told me Jonathan Taylor wasn't going to get a run over 20, I think I would have said, there's no way.
Totally agree. I mean, because it's hard because with all that said, they did rush for 320 yards. And so, you kind of go, it's a hard sell because Mo Berry after the game made the comment that he thought they actually did okay and that got chewed up because of the stats. And it's
they did do okay if they would have tackled. I would say they would have done really well if they would have tackled because they didn't give up the big play with Taylor, which most teams give up at least one of those. He pounds, and he busts a long one.
Yeah.
So what he did was he kind of pounded on us and wore us down, but it was mostly just like from missed tackles.
Right.
And that's the part that I think is frustrating is we did our jobs about two-thirds of the way there, and it just wasn't like go finish it off, go tackle him, wrap up. It doesn't even matter if you get trucked over. Just don't let go.
Right.
And we were doing that stuff. We were throwing shoulders in there, and we weren't wrapping and grabbing. Because I that's what happens with this guy. People just
– right. He runs through arm tackles.
They
like,
make – the business decision is duck the shoulder and hit him, and it's not
– right.
That's a business decision. Hey, business decision. Don't take it all in your face. Take it in your face and eat it.
Yeah.
I'd say I'd rather fall back and make the
bring
tackle
him down than
take the chance of whiffing like we have.
I still think sometimes it's easy to forget that Deontay Williams got hurt after the first game of the year. I mean, Deontay Williams was starting at safety.
Yeah.
Like, you're having to then move your secondary guys around. Cam Taylor got hurt for a little bit. It's just been kind of that area has been challenging.
For sure. I think if there's more than any other position, I mean, outside linebackers, the pass rush thing has been rough. But I think our safety play has been really the part that has been difficult. Cam Taylor's been doing all right. He's young, but he's been banged up trying to play. But really, that other spot's the one that's been like, ooh, we've really needed somebody there that we haven't been able to find.
We got to talk about our favorite player, how the Ultimate Warrior, Garrett Nelson. I mean, there are a couple times he was sticking his head in there.
Well, I didn't know that Tyron Ferguson left the team. Okay. So. Yeah. I think that's pretty telling that Nelson gets a black shirt, gets real PT like that, and that's what I'm good to. I'm glad that with the black shirt came real playing time.
Yeah.
They said we're giving this to you because you're going to be out there and you've earned it. And maybe a guy that's not all in clearly. I mean,
right? To leave the
you're a senior and you leave. That's part of the. I think, and this is a guess. I have no clue what's going on with this guy. But if I had to make a bet, I'd go to Vegas and bet. Hey, who's one of those culture guys that we probably needed to move on?
How do you quit with three games left as a senior?
I have no idea.
Like, I can't even wrap my mind around that.
I don't know, but I know this. Nobody's probably going to miss him.
I mean, if you're quitting at three, I mean, I almost thought it was like I had to. That was one of those when I saw that story, I had to like click on it and think that has to be like a typo or something.
Yeah.
What, he's quit the team? What? I think
that's a direct correlation to
the Ultimate Warrior.
Ultimate Warrior running around shaking the ropes a couple of times. And he goes, I'm not doing that.
I love the Ultimate Warrior.
Ultimate Warrior did a pretty good job. You know,
for a young Matt Millen calling the game, goes, he goes, 44, I like this kid. He's got no idea what he's doing, but I like him.
Some of Matt Millen's comments, I was like, Matt, you've been watching film on the old. I go, how many plays has he had? Like seven? Like, what are you talking about? I think they must have had like the media breakdowns. Like, this guy's a nut job.
Yeah, or you had one, or in your day before meetings.
Yeah.
You know, you ask about Nelson and Chenander or whatever, just like, oh, he's a warrior.
An animal.
He'll stick his head in there.
And Milne's like, I like animals.
Let me write that down. Because I'm telling you, that's how stupid TV can be sometimes, where it's like you have these conversations with coaches. One thing catches your eye, and you're just like, oh, yeah. I like that. I'm going to go with that. All right, we're at about an hour. A couple of things. I want to reiterate. Like, the other thing you talked about in the offseason, got to increase weapons on the offense, got to work on red zone offense. They, once again, have to take another good hard look at special teams. Like, and I don't know what, you know that world better than I do. I don't know what that even means. I think sometimes, special teams, Sip always has an interesting anecdote. He goes, I always think special teams is a reflection of culture because it's a grind. It's like they're grinder plays. And yeah. that I also think it's a reflection of depth.
Depth is better. I'm a bigger believer in depth. I don't think the culture's correct, but I also think like our depth is so low that some of these guys, like, we don't got good punters and kickers right now.
I mean,
these guys just don't. They don't make a lot of their kicks, and we don't seem to turn the ball over, like turn the field over as much with longer, deeper kicks. And, you know, untimely bad kicks, too. We've had so many of those punts when you shank it when you don't need it, and you kick it high and short or out of bounds when you don't need it. It's like, that's just that's not good enough.
Well, the problem is, too, is we've all been spoiled around here. The one thing that throughout the whole 15 plus years of like not winning a conference championship, the one thing Nebraska's like consistently had is like an elite kicker.
Kyle Larson, Sam Cook, and
Alex Henry,
Brett Maher.
Yeah, like those guys were.
We always had all American punters and kickers.
So you know, like you get, you know, it's the classic. It's the classic position that you just take for granted until you don't have one.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, if this team had like a good punter in Alex Henry, like they may be have one or two more wins.
It's worth a win or two.
I mean, I swear to God, I know that sounds, you know,
and that's not a lie though, Nick. I mean, that's why these guys, you know, like you might get guys in the pros that get drafted.
That's why I'm always hearing people like, oh, you never draft a kicker. I'm like, or you never waste a scholarship on a kicker. I'm like, I mean, if you got a really good one.
Oh, I'll waste two scholarships on a kicker for a good one.
I mean, you got a million corners.
Take the 2017 recruiting class, which we're going to keep going back. Yeah. We had like 20 scholarships. We got like two guys even on the team playing. Right. Like, use one of those on a good kicker.
That's right. I'm one of those guys that is always
get a good kicker. Don't tell me that those guys aren't important. Like, yeah, they never feel like they're quite as much a part of the team because they don't have to.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy.
But you know what?
Like,
they're important. Don't tell me they're not important.
They're very important. Before we get into the 2-year extension to kind of wrap it up with Frost, don't know if you agree with this. I think if Nebraska plays like they just did and they get Wandale back and can get Darian Daniels back and all that, I think they're going to beat Maryland, and I think they got a decent shot to beat Iowa.
Yeah, we'll see how we can sustain. I mean, to me, this was the offensive line and Martinez. That's all this was. Those two guys elevated this last week.
Elevated Mills, I suppose.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think Mills is going to give you what Mills can give you. I think he's one of those guys you can count on.
Like, I think he's a guy that you can count on. He's not Barry Sanders, but...
Yeah, he's not going to go and, you know... He's not going to do what Wandale can do and sort of just make something out of nothing. Yeah. But he's going to... If you give him an opportunity and there's, you know, he's meat and potatoes.
Totally.
He's going to the old country buffet and he'll say, what do you have there? I'll take some of those meat and potatoes. There we go. Got to be at Old Country Buffet by 4:30 sharp.
He's Thanksgiving with nothing but turkey and mashed potatoes.
Oh, God. Don't even tell people.
The time Bo Rude came to the Baugh family Thanksgiving.
This
should have been height urine.
I'd like to make an appeal. I'd like to appeal to the court. This is skewed. It's been blown out of proportion. The Baugh family holds it against me.
So this would have been when Barrett was playing at Colorado on Black Friday. So I have to guess your whole family went to Boulder except you. And so, of course, the Baughs being your second family, of course, you're going to come to Fremont and go to Grandpa Patty and Grandpa Al's house with us. And Bo being the guest of the Baugh family at Thanksgiving, we're going to let him go first through the buffet line. And so there's a little pressure because literally the entire Baugh family is watching Bo go through first. And so, you know, they had cut a bunch of pieces of turkey onto a plate, you know, to scoop some onto your plate and then move on down the conveyor belt. When I say Bo took 78% of the turkey that was on the plate and put it on his plate, That is not a lie. And my uncle Chip, of course, had the line as he's like, "Bo, you're gonna leave it eat for us?" And
then the
Baugh family erupts in laughter.
Oh my God.
And it is a standing tradition at the Baugh family Thanksgiving where there's gonna be a Bo Rude turkey joke. Because that's what happens.
It's every year I get a text from somebody in the family. Is there any turkey left over there, wherever you're at?
You took so much turkey. And the amount of turkey that you took is increased.
It was a lot. I mean, because I used to eat turkey and mashed potatoes. That's all I would eat. I'd eat meat and potatoes. I didn't believe in vegetables for a long time. Stuffing, I thought stuffing was for the birds. I wanted... How much turkey and potatoes and gravy could you eat?
Oh, you ate so much.
And then I'd maybe take a roll and you'd clean up the gravy.
You mop it.
You mop it and you just, and then you have a big.
Didn't mean you'd go play bumper pool.
Oh, man. Yeah, Grandpa Al would be in the corner falling asleep and his glasses would be on the top of his forehead.
Yep.
And they'd fall and hit him in the nose and he'd wake up and look around and go, "What? What is it? What is it?" And me and Nick would be in the corner dying with laughter, and then he put him back up in his head, fall back asleep, and this would happen over and over.
It was great,
and it was just
life was good.
Yeah,
was it not?
It was the best. Baugh family Thanksgivings. It's the holidays are almost here, but
how did we get? Oh, you said Mills was meat and potatoes.
He's meat and potatoes. Yes. Yeah, but anyway, so I'm scarred by this now. So my in-laws now, I go to their house for Thanksgiving,
yeah,
and they insist I go first, and I go,
"You have PTSD.
I will never go through the line first now. I'm back of the line. I go, I've had a bad experience this. You guys go first." I go, "I'll take what's left." And then I go.
It's almost better to be the last one because then you're not like, then you can kind of take a lot.
You don't
no one's going to say anything.
Hey, you're not going to be the butt of jokes for years running.
I mean, we're going on 20 years-ish of you being a Thanksgiving joke to us. You understand that?
It was a great Thanksgiving.
It was a hell. Maybe it was one of the better Thanksgivings.
I want to say maybe my favorite ever.
It was just a great day. We played horse.
Backyard horse.
As family, go play horse. It just was. Everything about that day was fantastic.
It was an old fashioned Nebraska Thanksgiving up in Fremont, Nebraska.
It was
folks.
So good. Oh. Okay, to wrap it up, there was the announcement a couple hours before the kick that Scott Frost received a 2-year extension. And, of course, so he had a 7-year deal. He had 5 years left. He gets the 2-year extension. And, you know, you get the cynical people that are like, "Oh, my God, I can't believe they're handing out extensions based on how this went." It's like, well, I think, number one, there clearly is something about the coaching world with extensions, with recruiting and all that stuff that matters. But I also think, it sends a message to everyone that like this is the guy. And then even I thought Frost, after, I don't know if you listened to his post game, he had a great answer to it that like Frost reiterated like, "This is where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And I am not leaving until I get this thing right."
Oh, let me ask you this. Do you think that was the right move for the university?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, to me, it's like, I think the optics of it, I didn't like the timing of it, to be honest with you. I thought, on one hand, I can understand if you do it right before the game, if the game can gobble up all the headlines and you forget about it. But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, you had a bye week. You could have done it throughout then. I thought the timing of it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But do I agree with it? Yeah, I agree with it because I think he's the guy. So, I mean, when you think someone's the guy, anything that reflects that, I'm going to be okay with.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think?
Because
I was actually, before I said, "Do we want to get into this?" And you said, "Yeah." I mean, I don't.
So my initial thought was it's 100% a recruiting tool right now. That move was saying, "Hey, this guy's going to be here." But even you just saying that, like I started thinking about who are the two coaches that just got fired, right?
Yep.
The guy from Arkansas. And the guy from Florida State,
Willie Taggart. Yeah.
Willie Taggart's from Florida State.
Yeah.
And they were second-year coaches. We have two Florida State commits on campus this weekend. So that makes me think even more that that's the case, that it is a 100% message to recruits. I know what happened at Florida State. I know what happened at Arkansas.
No, it's a good point.
This guy's not in that situation. This guy's not only got a runway – we added 2 more years to that runway. So if you're that Florida State recruit or these JUCO guys going, oh, yeah, but this guy's, they haven't had a good year. Maybe he's getting canned next year if it doesn't go well. That's the message to recruits is, no, no, no. Look at what we did here. This is two more years. That means there's no way he's getting fired.
Yeah, it's a good
for
point
3 years.
Because it's easy to, of course, people like me and you and anybody that lives in Lincoln and Omaha and in the state and is in it understands that, yeah, this guy ain't going anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're Joe Schmo, defensive back recruit or whatever, you don't know that. I mean, you don't, you're not in.
No.
You don't understand what that, what really it's like. And as you said, you look over and see two second-year coaches get fired. And I've always told people, and this was one of the things that I would always like, I thought one of the things that hurt Nebraska basketball for a long time, and I thought it hurt Pelini too, was nothing. You know what's recruiting repellent is head coaching uncertainty.
Bingo.
If recruits look at a situation and they think even if for a second that coach might not be there for very much longer, they'll just say, no, I don't want to even if they like it, they'll be like, that's too shaky of a situation for me to want to get on board with.
Yeah.
So you're right. So maybe it's just, even though, because for me, I saw it and I'm like, my, because sometimes you get caught in your own bubble of like, well, of course he's not going to get fired. Why? I mean,
yeah,
who wants his, but like we're saying, those recruits maybe don't know.
They announced it why those guys are here,
right?
Probably with them in the room. Who knows?
Frost,
right?
Like, signed the contract.
Yeah.
Like in a-
I mean, that's a little bit, it's for show. I mean, but that's what you're doing. These recruiting sessions, it's dog and pony show. I mean, you are doing, you're doing whatever you can to separate yourself from these other schools and to convince people that this is the right place for you.
And any more.
And your point about the coaching, like the coaching, I couldn't agree more. Like,
that is recruiting repellent.
When you think this guy might be gone, if it's even close, you're not going to that school. Turn over with the coach you want to go to.
Not only is it not even close, you're not going to that school, sometimes you won't even get a visit. You'll be like, no, I don't, I only get so many visits. I only get so, like, if I think there's a chance that that guy's not going to be there, no way. And anymore, that's a huge thing in like this day and age of college football and even big time college basketball, where people, like, coaches get fired and move on fast. And let's be honest, what has Nebraska developed a reputation for a little bit is like firing coaches.
Yeah.
And again,
and do you know who we're competing against right now? So in our little 500-mile bubble,
radius,
right?
Yeah.
We're competing against those teams. But even on a national, like, because we're a national program.
Yeah.
But on a national scale, California, Texas, Florida. SEC, Florida, the guys that are going to come to the Big Ten, Wisconsin, Michigan,
Ohio,
Minnesota.
Are you talking about in the West?
Let's take out Michigan. Let's just do Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa. Those three. Those guys have head coaches that are secure.
Right.
So if our head coach is not secure, I mean, it's a coin flip with some of these kids, which one of these schools they're going to go to.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, I really like Minnesota. I really like Nebraska. Wisconsin or us. It comes down to like, oh, man, I like them both. If it's a question of is our coach going to be there, we'll lose every time in that battle. So I think that's such a smart move the more I think about it. Because it's in the end, it's just,
I mean,
whatever you want, but the optics of it are really positive.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad we talked about this because I'm not going to lie, when I saw it, I thought, okay, the timing of it seems kind of almost like you're inviting the cynical a-holes to have comments on it.
Yeah, but you are competing against PJ Fleck, who just took another extension.
Right. But the thing that I'm also glad we're talking about is like it got me out of my bubble of like, you know, I mean, again, I saw it and I'm like, well, of course of course he's not going anywhere. But again, from the outside world doesn't know that, you know?
Yeah,
like when I host that national Fox Sports radio show on the weekends when I'm now not doing basketball, I'll talk to the producers back in L.A. And, you know, because we're talking a lot of college football on Saturdays, and like off the air, one of them asked me, he's like, hey, is Frost okay? Like, is Frost going to get – is he going to survive this? And I was like, yeah, he's going to survive this. But you forget – from the outside world, anymore, when people struggle, like, that's a thing.
The Arkansas, so Taggart at Florida
State.
Chad Morris at Arkansas. That Frost is being judged against them. Like, he's saying these are all second-year coaches. They've lost a bunch of games, and they're out.
Yeah.
And so Frost, on a national level, is lumped in with them because people don't know any better. But here locally, we understand this has to be the guy. He is unquestionably the most qualified and the best candidate we can possibly get here.
That's why when you asked me, like, are you okay with it? I'm like, well, yeah, I'm okay with it. I told you on Wednesday, I'm married to him.
Yeah.
Right now, if my wife to him is like, you want to add 2 years to our marriage? I'm like, yeah. I mean, we're married. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, let's add it.
Sure, whatever. Like, we're married. Like, I am married to Mr. Guns Frost. So, like, I, of course, I'm okay with it.
But, Mr., you're going to cheat on with Mr. Hands.
Big Hands. Tell you what, Mr. Big Hands. I was so distracted by it. He had man hands. Let me tell you, dog. Let me tell you. I want you to meet Frost and he had some mitts on. He looked like if he was in the UFC and he caught you.
Those big fighters, that, you know, the good heavy fighters have big, heavy hands. So when
there's
they punch
to
it,
that. That's why I like my
cinder
hands,
block hands.
My hands are not meant for knocking people out.
Yeah, they're
just not, Bo.
Now you got to have those big.
They're meant for shooting threes.
For wetting threes.
And that's about it. That's about it. Just about it.
So did we miss anything? What did we miss?
You go around the horn and go to Tony Reale. Like, where did we mess up?
Nick, I'd say we've had some goofy, crazy moments on the. But I think this was maybe as well executed
we
as a podcast as
we executed. Had. We may be down 34-14 right now.
We didn't win the game.
Our podcast is
but
down.
We blocked them up good.
We did what we needed to do we put our podcast in position to be successful.
Next year, I'm telling you, next year's our year.
We gotta get some better microphones. Work on a few different
things. Better microphones.
That's it.
You know,
that's all we need to do. Okay.
Just, you know, go out there. We'll get some guests. We're gonna get some guests.
We got a long runway with this pod to take off.
Nick,
you know what?
Are you gonna offer me? I'm
gonna
offer you an
I'm
extra
sign it. A two-year extension with the Nick Bob podcast.
Let
me sign
that.
Sign that up.
Okay.
Right, there we go. Deal. All right, my friend. Well, we got two more games left. Hopefully three. Hashtag here's for a warm weather bowl game to break out. I mean, you just usually December is when you hide the guns.
Now
I'm
going
to be doing
beach.
Curls for Frost every day just to make sure that I am mirroring his guns.
We started with curls. Let's finish with our curls.
All right, my friend, let's wrap it up.
Curl it out.
Make sure you subscribe to the pod. Don't worry. You never miss an episode. That'll do it for us. Bo Rude, I'm Big Boss, saying so long, everybody.